system in user space, let's say even lighter.
Right.
But given that one might be using an existing file system, that is the thing. And if one can take CSS out and put it in user space using Fuse or something, that's also very nice.
So I think, I think there are some questions with respect to implementation as to where things go in the long run versus the prototype, right? And I think we can talk about that as well. So I just wanted to let you know that Luis, Jorge, and Ricardo are here as well. They just came in. Okay, and...
Okay, hey guys.
So far Ajay and I have just been talking about, you know, high level what the goals of the of this effort are, and I think both Ajay and I agree that initially we should just focus on building an initial prototype that that showcases a solution that is in some way superior to simple competitors such as, you know, SSD-based caching and over-provisioning of high-performance resources to guarantee some sort of latency, right? Now, how do we sort of differentiate a QoS-aware or QoS-enabled storage from something much simpler, right? I think that's one of the first things that we need to work on. And so I think Ajay had some ideas earlier about how we could possibly make the case, right? If we have multiple classes of applications where some applications are more important than others, then having a knob that allows us to differentiate across these applications can be an easy way to show that what you can do with such knobs, right? As opposed to, you know, if you have just caching, which treats all workloads the same, doesn't give you the kind of control, right? So that's one possible case study that we can do with different classes of applications. The other that I was suggesting is if you have a workload that requires a certain performance and suddenly, you know, the access patterns change, then and so that the caching system cannot respond quickly enough or it's ineffective pretty much, then how can you actually do better if you had priorities in terms of issuing I/O for that virtual disk instead of having no control at all, right? So maybe you can still do something in case where your workloads change suddenly if you have some knobs, some additional knobs in the storage system, right? So those are the kinds of case studies that we can use to possibly differentiate why such a solution is useful. So Ajay, do you have anything to add to that?
No, I think you've covered something.
Okay. So I think the... Now, since this is just an initial planning meeting and we're all busy with fast deadlines, so we'll try to keep this short, but I think it would be good to talk a little bit about the problem and possible solutions, just to get everyone thinking about the problem itself, and if there are, you know, in the meanwhile, before our next meetings, you might have some more ideas. Given that you know we have some structure for thinking about the problem, right? So far, Ajay, I'm going to just repeat the formulation that you presented to me at Usenix, which is, and I've already told these guys a little bit about it at one of our previous meetings. Your approach to QoS is based on latency, right? And building a storage system or a storage box, specifically and something that exports NFS, right, and provides control at the VMDK granularity, right, and you can set per VMDK latency limits or upper bound, and per VMDK IOPS upper bounds, right? And then the storage system should be should expose an interface that first of all allows you to do this, and it also tells you whether a certain configuration is feasible or not, right? So there is an admission control aspect to this. You cannot just go and say, I want a million IOPS on this one VMDK when the storage box itself cannot do a million IOPS. So you have to have some kind of maybe a coarse-grained mechanism to determine if the guarantees are satisfiable or not, right? So that's one problem, right? And then there's a whole bunch of resource management problems once these guarantees are specified. And so the ones that I can think of and we've already discussed are related to, well, how do you schedule IOs that are coming in for these VMDKs? How do you partition the memory cache for across these VMDKs? Right? How do you leverage an architecture that is heterogeneous, maybe with different kinds of disk drives, SSDs, that are maybe low performance and high performance? So how do we partition space across all these devices for each of these VMDKs in a dynamic fashion, right? So I already did talk about the scheduling. I guess.
Yeah, I think the problem is sort of well understood.
Right.
In terms of what one would like to achieve. The question is how to do it, what all does it take?
Right. So I think, I mean, the goal is to, in some sense, provide the guarantees at the minimum cost, right? So can we make an assumption, which is following, that the storage box itself is static, that we don't have any flexibility in terms of choosing what kind of devices to put in there? It's like a standard box, right? Has 16 SATA drives, 16 SAS drives, maybe 8 SSDs, and maybe if there is space, then some additional flash PCI Express cards, right? So can we make an assumption that the box itself doesn't change? It's a standard box, right? And now then the question is, what can I store in that box, and what kind of guarantees can I provide for the stored VMDKs? Right? Is that sort of a problem a reasonable version? Because the other version that I can think of is we go to a customer and tell him, okay, give me your spec and I'll build a box for you, custom box for you. Right? Just based on...
I think getting the full specs is hard. One can always start with some configuration. And it's nice to have a situation where after you have a configuration and based on the workload you are seeing, if next workload comes in, it will be good to mention which peer one should add, which peer is running out. That I think is a good thing to have.
Okay.
But to begin with, one can just assume some decent configuration.
Is that standard industry practice, in your opinion, or?
I mean, it's definitely something that people do by the front end of the array, and they add disks later on. So most of the arrays, they let you buy the front end, and you can buy one shelf of disks, and you can add more disks later on. So in this particular case, you can add any kind of tier later on. You don't have to force yourself to buy just one kind of tier.
I have a question. So it's necessary to have multiple tiers, or we can simplify for now the problem of having just one tier?
I think multiple tiers are needed for the cost advantage. If you can do everything using one tier, which tier would you pick?
Okay. I think the other issue is that, I mean, based on what Ajay and I were talking about earlier, he was saying that in terms of what the industry folks are saying and for QoS is that the easy way to guarantee some kind of quality is to put more and more SSDs in the front end. right? Just keep adding. If you want, you know, whatever, for 50 millisecond latency, use 10 SSDs for your workload, right? So the competition is also a multi-tier solution. So when we do our comparison with something else, we might run into issues there because we just have one tier, whereas the competitor has the advantage of multiple tiers.
Yeah, Raju, actually, there is somebody waiting for me at the office. I think something has come up.
Okay.
Can I drop the call and join you guys a little later? You guys can continue the discussion.
Okay. Are you going to call
me? I think it'll
call me.
I can try to call back later if you give me a time. Actually, I mean, 4 o'clock would be the best, but it may be too late.
Yeah, well, I think we are all about ready to head home in half an hour. So, the other possibility...
How about you have the discussion? We can touch base tomorrow.
Okay.
Or...
Yeah, that, I guess that's fine.
That's fine. It's just that I think somebody is already waiting to discuss something.
That's fine, Ajay. We can... I'll give you an update later.
Okay.
Bye. So I guess you guys have some idea what the problem is, right? So I think the way I see it, there are lots of different questions here, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we can build really complicated solutions around each of these questions. The challenge would be to make the overall solution as simple and understandable as possible. Right, I think that's where the challenge is. So I don't know. I mean, I'm not expecting us to come up with any design today, but at least we could talk about some ideas as to what you might think about this problem, and just to get everyone thinking along a little bit more.
First, depending on whether you're optimizing IOPS or latency, you have different choices of what you want to do. For example, if you will have a reservation of IOPS and your workloads have some characteristics, you can just add more spindles and you will get,
mm-hmm.
you allocate more spindles to this particular workload and you will get the reservation. But if it's latency, you cannot get less latency from a spindle or bigger spindles. You still limited by the latency of disks, so you need to whether SSDs or RAM or whatever. So I think at least for latency, the main issue in this project is how to manage caches.
How to manage caches?
Yeah.
Both memory and
SSDs.
But sometimes caching is, like I said earlier, sometimes caching may be useless. Because your workload is just a rogue workload, right? Or it's temporarily behaving very weird.
Let's say it's not reusing anything.
Mm.
If it's not
at least for yeah,
the cache won't help.
Yeah.
So you cannot reduce latency in any.
You could possibly do some I/O scheduling with priorities because you can get to a disk in less than 10 milliseconds.
Well, yeah, that's true.
So you could do something there,
yeah.
Right? Even under load, let's say you're under intense load, you still, you know, guarantee some VMDK, the disk, first disk access, because caches are useless for that VMDK.
Okay.
And you can still control latency a little bit with some scheduling.
So what if we define something like, let's say you have a possible ranges of latency reservation, latency limits.
Mm-hmm.
So for the high range, you have techniques like scheduling.
Mm.
And then as you go lower, you have techniques like SSD caching, and then you end up in RAM caching, and RAM caching at the host side instead of the SSD side and things like that. So maybe we can consider the approach of trying, it doesn't work, try, doesn't work, try, doesn't work. If it doesn't work at this level, we cannot do it. And have something like iterative approach of trying to get to a latency limit you set up for a specific work,
mm-hmm.
and trying the different techniques.
So you have, what you're talking about there is where to put the workloads?
No, I'm talking about different knobs.
Yeah.
We can use to
so
get
why did you go the other way around?
Well, because this is cheaper, right?
Yeah, but you can then demote stuff. It's easier to demote stuff than to...
I mean, let's say you need a limit of 1 millisecond. So you try by putting this BMDK on RAM on the host side. Let's say you get 1/10 of a millisecond. So what do? You try the next knob and until you start failing?
I feel like the latencies, no one will ask for RAM latencies, right, to storage box.
No, but I'm saying it would be nice to, I mean, even if nobody asks for now, it would be nice to be able to provide latencies in the whole, in a large range.
Right, but see, the thing is that it's not the only workload running in the box, right? You have a lot of workloads, right?
Yeah.
And they're all mixing together. So it's not that even if you have a certain latency, and you put, using that latency, you put stuff in the SSD, you had to share the SSD bandwidth with a whole bunch of other workloads. So
yeah. Well, the point of this was that you have a lots of knobs for controlling latency at many levels. You have scheduling, or you have caching, or you have, I don't know, different ways of scheduling the disk, or well, lots of different knobs. If we consider all possible knobs for all possible workloads at the same time, that's intractable. So we need some more tractable approach of using these knobs. And the goal of this was just that.
I guess maybe I didn't quite understand how you plan to use the knob, or how you're proposing to use the knobs.
Well,
so take an example for a workflow, right, and work through this idea.
No, let's go from the beginning. Then you have all these knobs. What do you do with them? You consider them, all of them simultaneously?
I don't even know if, you know, what these knobs are. I mean, without knowing what these knobs are, we cannot really talk about how to use them, right? I mean, when you say SSD knob, I don't know what that means.
I mean, that means give a workload X megabytes of SSD.
I don't know if that's a good knob. What knob may be more directly related to latency would be to say, okay, on SSD, this BMDK would get average 10 milliseconds. Something like that would be more directly usable for guaranteeing overall latency.
Okay.
Right. So, and I can solve that using a scheduler, right? So
you mean the IO scheduler? No.
Yeah. The IO scheduler, because if
priority-based, right?
Yeah, based on some priority. So if a BMDK needs 10 millisecond on the SSD, and some other BMDK needs 50 millisecond on the latency, then I will give higher priority for this first BMDK, right? So I could do some scheduling decisions there.
So you're talking about two knobs, right? Are scheduling and placing or not a workload in the...
Yeah, I cannot use that first knob without having the data there in the first place, right? So
yeah.
So that's sort of interrelated there. I feel like scheduling is central in some sense, especially because you have lots of workloads that are mixing together.
Is there something like real-time IO scheduler?
Yeah, there are many real-time schedulers that people have built even for disk.
Right.
Yeah.
Because that will give you some kind of guarantees, right? In the real time, you will ask for a certain latency.
Yeah, it might be a good idea to maybe read one or two of those papers. I can try to find something, find papers, and Ajay may also have some suggestions in terms of deadline-based IO schedulers.
Right.
And there are a whole bunch of deadline-based CPU schedulers.
You're talking about the scheduler at the hypervisor, or the scheduler
at the storage
box.
At the storage box.
Everything is
no hypervisor.
Storage.
Yeah.
Everything is storage.
Yeah, forget hypervisor.
Because that will have an effect also.
Yeah, of course. But the thing is that we are making guarantees to the hypervisor. If the hypervisor is not utilizing those guarantees, then yeah, it's not our problem. That's
no. But what I'm saying, we could boost performance even more by by coordinating with the hypervisor.
Oh, definitely. I think definitely. I think that's. I see that as a, in some sense, maybe a follow-up. Once you have something like this, then you can build many interesting things on top of that, right? I agree with that. So I think we should start thinking about this problem with just a thing with a blank slate, and it's good to assume that there is a fixed box that has, you know, 3 or 4 tiers of storage at different performance, and then the question is that you have a whole bunch of workloads to each VMDK, and we want to satisfy guarantees that to each of those, right? How do we do not just scheduling but also caching and our space management, dynamic space management? It's kind of open at this point.
By the way, each file is a VMDK, right?
Yeah, so each file is a VMDK.
But the guarantees would be at the file.
At the file, yeah.
I think one thing that we can start is by doing what you were proposing, the partitioning of the cache.
Yeah.
Right? So we can start by doing something like that, partitioning the cache into separate pieces and allowing only VMDKs to grab a piece and only give another piece when their latency goes above some threshold or something like that. That way we can allow some sort of admission control. But I'm not sure if we're gonna be able to have some admission control that it's just based on math. I think it has to be.
By the way, I have another question. In terms of the guarantees, we're talking about guarantees of latency, but that latency would be like a hard upper bound, or some IOs can go above it.
Some average, right?
Something like a 90 percentile.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm thinking more like 99 percentile.
99 percentile.
Yeah. Otherwise, well, or at least 95, right? 99, ideally 99% of the I/O should be below 50 millisecond, and the remaining should not be more than, let's say, 1 second or something like that.
Another thing, I guess we can scale the percentiles. That could be actually a variable. It doesn't have to be fixed, right?
It makes things harder
and
just more complex. I mean,
more complex.
I mean, I don't think people want to control distributions.
Okay.
Right? I mean, admins don't want to do that.
Okay.
They just want to say, okay, I want 50 millisecond latency, and as long as they understand that that means 99% of the requests will give me 50 millisecond or less.
Yeah,
and
the guarantee is a 99% of the time. We will have a...
It's very easy to visualize for someone who's not thinking about distributions all the time, right?
I see. But, I mean, 99% isn't that very hard to achieve, or do you think it's doable?
I don't know. I think that's what we want to do that at a reasonable cost. I think that's where the challenge is, right?
Mm.
If you just have like a million disk drives and a million SSDs, you can do 100%, right?
Yeah.
But that's not the case. We want to do it at a cost that is competitive or better than what already exists. Because what others are selling is, okay, if you want, you know, some applications that are more important, put them on SSD, right? Add more SSD. So we are saying, well, you don't need so many SSDs. You can actually live with a box that's much cheaper and can provide you almost the same guarantees. Right? That's kind of the story we want to tell.
Okay. I see. So then the problem could be where to place things I guess, or partition the cache or whatever, which is the same as where to place things. And then, I think it's exactly what you said, and then how do we schedule all those devices to make that happen?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's also, you know, a management, a dynamic priority management question. And that's probably one of the things we could look at. How do we change the priority of various VMDKs dynamically based on overall system status, right?
Okay.
One thing that I'm thinking is that probably you'll have to at some point say, okay, I guarantee this latency up to some amount of IOPS.
Yeah. Okay, so I think we didn't talk about that. So there is an IOPS limit.
Okay,
as well.
Yeah, because of...
Right, so what that means is that if the VMDK exceeds a certain IOPS, then the guarantees don't hold anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
The guarantees may or may not be respected.
Exactly.
And then we may also want to implement some form of throttling so that other VMDKs don't get affected. Right? So that seems reasonable. Mm-hmm. It was one VMDK said it would issue 100 IOPS, but it starts doing 500, then that could mess up others.
Mm-hmm.
Ideally, it shouldn't. I mean, all the scheduling and cache management and so on should be able to address that if we have the solution right. But we could also take a more simpler approach by just saying, okay, this VMDK is issuing too many IOPS per second, let's throttle it. And make the management or scheduling, caching, so on, problem easier at the lower level because you're throttling at the entry point.
By throttling, you mean that we enforce receiving only 1,000 IOPS for that VMDK?
Yeah, something like that.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
I don't know if the clients would want that, but something which... Well, at least initially, it's something that we can defend. We can defend, right? This is the agreement, and if it's more, then we'll do the throttling, and maybe the
I guess something else that we have to envision for is if you change a VMDK, you change its attributes, saying, okay, before I had, I don't know, 1,000 IOPS and 100 milliseconds, now I want 10,000 IOPS and 50 milliseconds.
Yeah.
Right, so, I mean...
Yeah, that should be possible, I guess.
Exactly.
And we should support that in our solution. The dynamic changing of the guarantees. So, I mean, about the caching thing, I somehow feel the caching is good, it's very powerful, but I view it more as an accelerator technology than as something that can guarantee anything.
No, now that I think about it, I mean, it's not the only control to latency,
mm-hmm.
right? It's one of the controls. Another control is scheduling, another control is putting workloads in different spindles. Or whatever.
What I'm saying is that's, if you just control caches, I think it's not enough because there can be situations where it's not enough. Right, so it can be very useful and powerful in maybe most of the cases.
But it's a brute force approach?
It's not a brute force approach. I'm saying that the main property that caches provide is an acceleration mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
They speed up the access.
Yeah.
But because the caches are much smaller and there are misses, you still need to guarantee something for things that miss. From the cache. And if you want to cache all workloads entirely, that may be an expensive solution as well. Maybe it's not necessary to cache the large working sets of all the workloads. You may be better off leaving some of them on disk and some of them on SSD. And with scheduling, you can still provide guarantees, right, for the misses.
Okay, so then you do agree with what I was saying, that different controls have different ranges at which they can control latency.
Yeah. Although what I feel is that because the way we formulated the problem to say 99% of the IOs need to get 50 millisecond or less, maybe 99.9, then either reading from the cache at sub millisecond or reading from the disk at 40 millisecond, actually no different. You can also think of it that way.
Yeah.
Because the IO in the end is meeting the deadline.
Yes.
So should you put that piece of data in cache? Is putting the piece of data in cache means spending money to buy the cache, right?
But you said you already have the SSD.
I'm saying that I already have it, but I only have a limited amount, so I can only put limited things in this, right?
Now, if there is contention for this limited space, we should detect that somebody else could be using it.
If there is no contention, then you can argue that you're over-provisioning the cache, and the question is by how much. Right, and how much can you save money by reducing that over-provisioning?
Okay, so that's fine. I mean, your point is that there are limits with caching.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
I'm saying it's
also not as straightforward because you can still meet latency guarantees at any of these levels, right? At the disk level or SSD level or RAM level. And just because these offer different latencies, I'm not sure whether it's straightforward application of that fact to solving the guarantee problem that we are facing. Right? Yes, RAM latencies give you sub-millisecond access. SSDs give you maybe also sub-millisecond or a couple of milliseconds, and disks give you 10 milliseconds. Right? To me, it's not clear if I want to meet a 50 millisecond deadline where I should put data for a VMDK. Because I can meet the deadline on any of these devices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it seems like it's a lot of scheduling related.
Yeah, I think scheduling is important.
Where you place the data.
Yeah, but even, I mean, it's what Brian was saying. It matters where you place the data, but if you, for instance, want to ensure 50 milliseconds, it really doesn't matter where you put it in the sense that any of the devices can ensure 50 milliseconds somehow, right?
If your queue builds up, you're not going to be able to...
Yeah, I know. I'm talking about if your queue is empty, if you don't have anything
in there. If your queue is empty, yes.
Then you can guarantee that even with the slowest device.
Yeah, but that's right. Probably not going to be the case.
Yeah, I understand that. But that means that, I mean, that of course there is some placing problems there, but once, let's say that everything is placed where it should be, then it's a scaling problem how we guarantee the times of each IO.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I mean, today's, we don't want to come up with solutions. We don't need to come up with solutions today, right?
Right.
Let's just think about this. And at this point, everything is open, right? Caching is open. If we can use it in a nice way, we can maybe focus on that, right, and use the caching as a centerpiece. But just feel free to think creatively at this point. Now, this is the point in every project where we can do whatever we want, right? And soon, when we start making things more concrete, we won't have that luxury. But right now, it's all open, right? So let's think, right? The other issue is more sort of technical, which is if we want to, you know, take this idea beyond a research project, then we want to build on something that is easy for us to sell, right, or commercialize, right? And that's why one of the suggestions that Ajay had was to build on an OS that already provides a lot of features, right? I think he suggested.
So one question before we go to that. So I see that I mean, there are two ways that this is being focused. One is as a research problem, and the research question that it has, and the other is commercial applications that it has.
I think the commercial application is a later concern at this point.
Okay, so
for now, I think there is no question of any commercial thing unless we have a solution. Right, unless we have something that we really believe in, and unless we have something that works, and unless we have something that's convincing for other people, right, that it's good in comparison to what already exists, right? I think that's our first hurdle. Once we have that, once we have a prototype, then we can think about commercialization. The reason I brought up this is that if agree that one possibility later on is commercialization and there is adequate interest, then assuming that we are successful in solving the problem and creating something, we would be in a much better position if we built on something that is more easily resellable, right? I mean, for instance, Solaris has all the nice features. I think Ajay also mentioned 3BSD because of the licensing issues. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't have to give anything back once we...
Once we modify, and so on. But even in previously, the CFS still has the same Solaris license.
Right. They are both, I believe, based on what Ajay was saying, is that you don't need to release any source.
Okay.
Solaris license 2?
Yeah, Solaris license 2. You don't need to release your source when you modify.
That's odd, but...
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I know BSD is like that, but I don't know Solaris.
Well, I think there are companies that sell CFS, but I don't know if they give the source code or not.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure Ajay knows what he's talking about. I don't know much about this, but he says that with Solaris, you don't have to give back the sources.
There is also, I guess Solaris is very mature, solid, and everything.
Mm.
There is also the solar operating system called Dragonfly BSD,
mm-hmm.
and it has sort of CFS file system. And it doesn't have the license, if there is a license problem. I mean, the license is much more easy, which is just a BSD, and you can do whatever you want with it.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, this is something also to think about, where, you know, what we want to use as a building block. So Ajay thought that Solaris is good because the code base is actually very good. It's much more nice than Linux.
Yeah.
So I guess it's much better written because
it's
something that was funded, right, as opposed to something that was sort of loosely funded.
And people don't change their mind in the design.
And there is a set of developers that are responsible for certain things for a long period of time, right? So
the experience I have with Solaris is that it is usually very heavy. So put it, you know, unless you have a huge machine, it doesn't work very well, I think.
Oh, you mean it's the footprint is big, the OS
footprint?
It's
very big, and CFS usually needs a lot of RAM.
Mm-hmm.
It's very aggressive with caching.
I see.
So, yeah.
Well, my suggestion was that we should use one of the new Silicon Mechanics servers as a prototype for this, as building hardware for this project. And I think Jorge is already using one of them, so he would know more about what...
The other thing about Solaris is that, actually, I have been trying to develop for Solaris, I mean, do some project for Solaris, but one of the problems I found is that it's really hard to compile.
Hmm.
It takes a long, long time to compile.
I mean,
and once you compile it, it's sort of boot. I mean, it doesn't boot that nicely. So,
interesting.
Yeah. So I don't know if that is better now, but I had some problems compiling the code.
Interesting.
But if you do it once, that's it. If we solve the issue, that's
the compilation.
Hopefully. But my point is that if you want to do something in the kernel, and you need to compile every time, compile, test, then taking a long time, the compilation is not nice.
I mean, you're saying that the compilation process takes time, or making the thing build is making you
I don't remember the details. I remember that I tried to compile just to boot the kernel, and it wasn't fast at all, or easy, for that matter.
Not about BSD.
FreeBSD, once I compiled it, and it was pretty easy.
You're right.
In fact, I think it's faster than Linux. I don't know the CFS part though. I guess it came with the, when I compiled it, came with Linux.
Yeah, the other thing is that I don't know how much Oracle is putting onto CFS lately.
But there's also open source Solaris project, right?
No, I think they haven't added anything.
There is a new one called
Open
new
Indiana. Project.
No, Open Indiana is Oracle.
Also,
stuff.
Again.
Yeah. Okay. And there is this one called Open Indiana? Probably
it's
what
Open
you're
Indiana.
Saying. But there is this one that is only dedicated to the kernel that is called Illumus or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea was to take over the code that Sun has before it was part of Oracle and go from there. So I think they have their own code, but from time to time they bring patches from Oracle and apply them to in mainland.
I see.
When available, because Oracle doesn't always.
I guess we could do more research into this and in the meanwhile figure out what is a good platform.
I think it would be nice to know exactly what we need, and then I think that will help us to decide what we can use. Because this other operating system I was talking about, the Dragonfly BSC, I think the file system is very nice. Probably it's not as mature as CFS, if it has a bunch of years. But it has a lot of the features that CFS has.
What is the name of the file system?
It's called HammerFS. And at least with this Dragonfly BSC, we can be sure that nobody's gonna ask about the license. I mean, we can do whatever we want.
The code is from scratch.
The code from scratch. I mean, it's all BSC. So if we know exactly, because probably. I don't know, probably there is something we need that is available in CFS or it's not available in HammerFS.
I think that's good. I think next time we have a meeting, we can talk about this. But the initial, before you guys came in, that's what Ajay and I were talking about. The initial stuff, or at least the initial prototype, we probably don't even need to do anything in the kernel if we can do a fuse implementation.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
So that may address some, you know, at least postpone that decision for a while.
That's good. Actually, there is a Fuse CFS implementation in Fuse.
Oh, there is?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I don't know how updated it is, but
it's
was
a Google project, I think.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it was a Google Summer of Code project.
Interesting. Yeah, but we can do stuff in user space.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
So the way I see it, we would start by a user space prototype, publish a paper on that, and depending on how successful that is.
No, I don't think that timeline is necessarily going to be like that, because publishing is, as we know, it can take years sometimes, right? If we have a prototype that we are convinced is commercializable, then we should go ahead with that effort in parallel with the publishing.
Okay.
Right? At least that's what I think. I haven't explicitly talked about this with Ajay, but I don't think he's crazy about publishing per se, right? I think he's interested in solving the problem in a good way, and then, you know, from there we can do whatever we want, right? Once we have a solution that works and we can talk to people about it and get funding for it for more things, right? In parallel, we can try and publish I think that's an effort we know can is a non-deterministic thing, right?
So how much of this can we get in a year?
It all depends on how fast we have we can build a prototype.
I guess the plan is, do you guys have any plan of how long, I mean, like what you were expecting this at least to have the prototype?
Haven't really thought much about it. I think the problem is difficult,
okay.
Right? And therefore, the prototype can take 6 months. I don't know. It all depends on how quickly we are able to agree on design and work out an implementation,
okay.
Right? And show experimentally that what we have is superior.
Okay.
Right, that can take 6 to 9 months.
By the way, superior than what? What
superior than just to? some over provisioned SSD cache storage.
Okay. Or we can also or something like how much are we saving by using our versus full over provision?
Yeah, exactly. Cost wise. What I think in the end people are only attracted if we can tell them that, okay, I can save you money, right?
Right.
Otherwise, they don't care.
Okay.
Yeah. But, yeah, Jorge, I hope you understand why it's very difficult to answer that question, whether this is a one-year thing or longer. My guess is that it all depends on how things go in the next 6 months with the research side of it. The prototyping side of it, and certainly we don't need to wait for a paper to be published before we think about commercialization. I mean, in an extreme case, if we really were worried about IP and protecting it, we may choose not to publish, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's certainly a possibility.
Yeah, but it would be nice to know what other people think.
Yeah. I mean, especially, I think for something like this, the paper cannot reveal everything, no matter what, no matter how much detail you decide to put in this. There's always something that's not easily describable in the paper, or, you know, we can choose not to, and so the paper is not the entire story, but it may reveal enough for someone to reproduce something similar, right? So that's the concern there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess you guys are concerned about the timeline because of your graduation plans, right?
Yeah.
I mean, for now, I would say don't worry. Just think about this as another research project as part of your PhD. You don't have to worry too much about that. Right. And if we go into commercialization and you guys are part of it, then certainly you will continue to be, even after you graduate, in some form. So you don't have to worry about that either. I think you know me enough to know that that should not be a concern for you guys.
No, that's not a problem. Yeah, well, one of the concerns that I have is what happens if we all go and then we have a semi-functional thing?
I don't think that's going to happen. So what will happen if we get to a point where, let's say, in 3 months or 6 months, we know that you guys might have far lesser time to contribute on the project, we'll bring in new people to have them continue. I don't think that should be a real problem. We've done this with other projects before, right? So I think the real challenge is to solve the problem and to build something. I think that's the core challenge. Everything else, at least in my mind, are not important issues, or at least I think that we can have very easy solutions for each question that, you know, we can come up with, which is non-researchy. So think about this, and at least until fast, we probably won't have another meeting. So well, after fast, with some after some break, we'll probably get together again. And you all have things going on in parallel. But I'm hoping that, you know, if you're, now I know that you're interested, that you will spend a fair amount of time on this project as well. I personally am very interested in to see where this goes, because it's one of those problems where the solution is not obvious, or at least even the path is not very clear, right? It's a challenge. And I was talking to Jorge the other day, is that this kind of a problem is actually good for a startup, because it's a difficult problem. Even if someone wants, let's say, wants to target the same market and the same kind of problem, coming up with a solution is going to take time, right? And if we do a good job replicating, it is not going to be, you know, an easy task. So that does give the competitive advantage that you typically need for something new, right, a new venture. So that's why it's also attractive for me. Okay, anything, any other questions that you guys have?
There are some ideas, right, in the research community about how to kind of control latency.
Mm-hmm.
Ajay came up with a few of them.
Mm.
So I guess we should review a bit of those, right? And then at the end, still needs like that. I mean, it's we have lots of controls, and controls have limitations, and we need a way of coordinating these, or try one by one or something. But the novelty of this stuff is how to use these previous controls that people already came up with. We're not inventing new controls. There's nothing else we can do, right? There's scheduling, placing stuff in different places, managing queue lanes.
But the goal is different, I think. I think that's the key difference. People have not really looked at this problem with this goal in mind. And if we
also a little bit. For example, this Ajay's work on scheduling something, the
M-clock.
Hmm.
It targets latency restrictions.
Hmm. Yeah, I think something like M-clock will fit in here, could fit in some form. But it's only one part of the whole puzzle.
It's one possible control.
Yeah.
And especially if you have a heterogeneous architecture, you don't know where to put that control and how to, maybe you need multiple such controls in different devices and things like that. It's challenging.
For another work I've seen for doing latency reservation is, I think on the cloud, something that was on the workshop on cloud, something that was
Cloud?
Quarter past six, so probably you can call Andy to see. Because he said 4 o'clock.
4 o'clock means 7.
Seven.
So there they had this idea of they divided the storage in like sub storage pieces,
uh-huh.
Like let's say four, and each one of them had their own latency reservation because they limited the queue. For example, option one has a limit of let's say four elements in the queue, and option four has a limit of let's say 100 elements in the queue. So if you put stuff here, you are guaranteed to have a latency about something.
This much.
Mm.
You put it here. So again, what I'm saying is that there are lots of ideas in it. We need, and the novelty of this stuff is how to combine them all, or the best one of them.
Yeah, but I think by limiting the size of the queue, it's not going to give you any guarantees.
It gives you a guarantee. I mean, it doesn't give you very precise guarantees,
but it gives you a bound.
It gives you a kind of bound.
Mm.
And that's what we have, right? I mean, we have some kind of bound. We say that 99% of the
time. But this is one of the billion controls. There are lots of controls. That's what I'm saying. And we need a way of coordinating them, or at least defining ranges at which each control will work.
Right. You need bound on the latency, and the size of the queue does help you a little bit, but you also need some scheduling beyond that.
Yes.
Some priority-based scheduling or some deadline-based scheduling that understands what are the precise deadline requirements for each IO. I agree. I think there are many pieces that have already been built in isolation, and part of our task is to bring together some of them and then build new, possibly new things to connect everything together.
Yes.
So one question I had, why was he mentioning Solaris? So Solaris has some sort of volume reservations or something like that?
The reason I think Ajay mentioned Solaris was purely because of the features that Solaris already implements, and we don't have to if we try to sell something
exactly. What features?
I think they have snapshotting, dedupe,
okay,
compression,
that sort of features. Okay.
The remote mirroring, backup, and all of that. Because any storage
you can
box.
Create volumes, right? You can create volumes. You can create file systems. You can create volumes. You can create SAN volumes too, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That's the volumes that we're talking about.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so it's just feature set, right? That
okay.
If we start doing this on Linux, we won't have most of it. And we'll have to re-implement all of those. And most of the storage boxes that are sold already come with those features built in. And then if you are to compete with them, you have to have those features as well.
Yeah, and the other thing is that in Linux, we have to give the code.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Because in Linux, there is also about the best answers it has, which has a couple of those nice features.
Okay, so...